Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is North Korea's H-bomb, hyped up or truly harmful, focusing on the reclusive country's latest nuclear weapons test. North Korea tested its most powerful nuclear weapon to date over the weekend, threatening to overshadow China's BRICS summit and Russia's Eastern Economic Forum, and also prompting a flurry of American military threats against Pyongyang. The BRICS nations took umbrage to what happened and harshly condemned North Korea and their joint Shaman Declaration, remarking in Article 44 that they, quote, strongly deplore the nuclear test, unquote. And President Putin said during a speech in Vladivostok soon afterwards that Russia does not recognize the country's nuclear status. The U.S., Japan, and South Korea, as could have been expected, were furious. And the Trump administration said in an ominous statement that North Korea is, quote, begging for war, unquote. And what most observers recognize as a clearly implied threat. It didn't help any either that North Korea later said that it would deliver a gift package to the U.S., which was obviously interpreted by many as a chest-thumping threat to nuke the American mainland. In response to all of this, South Korea is enhancing its ballistic missile capabilities, and there's speculation that it and Japan might even be considering their own nuclear weapons programs. The international community is divided over what to do to North Korea, with Russia and China advocating their joint proposal for the U.S. and South Korea to freeze their provocative war games if North Korea puts its nuclear program on hold. While the U.S. and some of its allies want to implement tighter sanctions against North Korea and possibly even launch a military strike against it, there's no doubt that North Korea's H-bomb test led to a lot of hyped-up reactions from its own representatives and those of its traditional adversaries. But the question on everyone's mind is whether an inflection point has finally been reached in this crisis, or if it's just going to go the way of every other one before it and eventually fizzle out into a preservation of the status quo. Alrighty, folks, now we know this is a topic that's on everybody's lips. The whole world is talking about it, and so too are our guests this week. The first one that we're going to speak to is Mr. Hanuel Naavi. Hanuel is a contributing editor on political economy and geopolitics for The Duran and co-host for WGDR's The Green Mountain Report.
Trendstorm.
How big of a deal is it that North Korea tested its first hydrogen bomb, and do you think that this marks a turning point, or is it just a bunch of hype on all sides?
Well, it was a very interesting situation that happened. There was an article published in the KCNA on September 3rd that talks about his guide to nuclear weaponization. Now, the nuclear deterrent does not target Seoul, but it targets other people. They can't really use it on Seoul. So a lot of the rhetoric is around, oh, well, if we protect our allies, which is South Korea, then everything will be okay. Well, you can't really use a nuclear weapon like a hydrogen, you know, like a hydrogen bomb on there. The hydrogen bombs are not used for short distances, and the distance between Seoul and Pyongyang is only 121 miles. So what these kinds of weapons would be more useful for are people like Japan or the United States. Them creating a hydrogen bomb doesn't really help their situation, in my personal opinion. And I think that this really goes further into the policy of brinkmanship that North Korea adapted after the fall of the Soviet Union and then the arrival of Kim Jong-il, which was roughly the period 1994 to 2011. Now, North Korea has consistently protested the military drills for decades, and the Sea of Japan is also a key concern that they've made mention of in previous publications.
Okay, yeah, you know, it's very interesting that you mention the timing and you spoke about the U.S.-South Korean war games. And that makes me want to ask you the next question, Hanuel. Why did North Korea choose this specific time to test the hydrogen bomb? Because not only are there ongoing U.S.-South Korean war games, but there are also Chinese and Russian summits that this test threatens to overshadow. So why do you think they chose now to test this weapon?
Well, it's very interesting. The summits do make up for a lot of the timing, but it's a bit different. Now, of course, the drills that you're talking about are the Ulchi Freedom exercises. Previously, when we talked about it, we talked about the Fall Eagle exercises. Now, these have been taking place roughly since 1976, and they're annual, and they've actually consolidated in 2008. So they've actually ramped up the scope and the scale of these different drills. So Pyongyang has consistently protested against these drills, and they've made mention of it. Now, there is something that you should focus on. August 9th was when Donald Trump, you know, US president, made the comment about hellfire and fury. And this was actually not related to what North Korea was doing, but it was related to a Washington Post article. And after reading that article, he made the comment. On August 14th, the KCNA responded to it and warned about the drills and the extra comments that Donald Trump was making. They were very out of line. So when we look at the situation, the summits don't necessarily represent, they don't necessarily represent a problem between the U.S. and North Korea. They represent more of a problem between the growing order of finance capitalism and the growing order of development that's taking place in the world. And this is actually what people should mention. Now, currently with the Trump administration, they represent the U.S. military-industrial complex with people like Mathis, McMaster, Kellogg, and Chin Kelly. The goal is more so to gain control of the strategic oil shipping routes in the South China Sea, the Strait of Malacca, and the Strait of Hormuz. Now, if you ask who are the current enemies of the United States, you would see that it's Iran and it's North Korea. But these people are strategically located next to these, you know, these shipping routes for oil. And that would actually control roughly about 50% of all oil trade in the world, all global oil trade. So what we need to look at is, why do they need a foothold in North Korea? Why are they being so belligerent and unwilling to compromise and unwilling to find a diplomatic solution on this matter?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting, Daniel. Thank you for sharing that. Now, the last thing I want to ask you is kind of looking forward a bit. It's about how the U.S. might respond to North Korea. I mean, it's already threatening a wide array of possible responses, including tightening the sanctions regime, improving the military capability of its regional allies, and possibly even carrying out a strike against North Korea. So what do you realistically foresee it doing, and how effective will this action or set thereof be in achieving the U.S.'s desired objectives?
Well, not very effective. They're actually very primitive tactics, both on the U.S. side and I would also argue on the North Korean side. You know, North Korea continues to, you know, pretend that they've got, you know, this 1950s mentality that we're going to use Juche philosophy, which is actually more closely linked to nationalism instead of socialism. But the United States, if they really think that they can do this, they're not going to be very successful. These are more so outdated third generational warfare tactics. However, they should note that if they wanted a military option, that North Korea is the 23rd best army on the planet. So better than Canada and better than Spain or many other NATO allies. And what it would result, because they have such large manpower, is that it would result in a battle of attrition between U.S., NATO, and North Korea, China, and Russian forces. And this would get very bloody for a long period of time. If you thought Afghanistan was bad, North Korea is even worse. Now, China and Russia have the ability to take out this situation very easily. And if you've ever heard of what they call an armbar technique in judo or jiu-jitsu or anything like Hapkido, what Russia and China need to do is to continue to use diplomatic solutions, but they also need to put pressure on the material resources that the United States has got available so that they can de-escalate this. Because anytime this war breaks out, they need to be able to cull the influence of the United States. And they can do this several ways. China can use the economic route by selling off bonds, selling off dollar holdings, and freezing U.S. assets. They can also, during these forums, encourage CISP at the OBR summits. And they can also, this is something that I wonder if they could possibly do, is to limit the incorporation of North Korea into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, or CSTO. So that way they get rid of the nuclear option. But if North Korea is attacked, there is the option of China and Russia to come to the defense. Russia can also use the petrochemicals route. They can negotiate with South FARs. They can demand payment in non-US dollars. They can also do several other things and expedite the consolidation of global resources under different alternative currencies. So I think these are routes that both China and Russia could use to bring about a solution to this crisis.
All right, Daniel, thank you so much, especially at the end where you shared a very constructive outlook and many compelling arguments in favor of your proposal. That was much appreciated.
Trendstorm.
Now we're going to hear what Mr. Syed Ali Isaiah Jaffrey has to say. He's a research analyst at the Global Village Space who focuses on nuclear security and strategic issues. How do you respond to the U.S. and its allies' claims that North Korea's H-bomb test makes it a threat to global security? And do you think that this rhetoric is more about hyping up what happened for self-interested reasons, or are they objectively onto something?
Well, it is a very complex topic as of now. The North Korean issue has gained a lot of traction in the past so many weeks. I think it cannot be termed as a threat to global security, but it is certainly a threat now to regional security, especially in the Korean Peninsula, the United States, Japan, the Guam, and the Pacific in general. And it entails a serious threat to China as well, because China can ill afford to have a peninsula which is dominated by a U.S. ally. Hence, I believe that China is not in a position to actually use all its leverage over South Korea. There are three reasons for it, and I'll shortly go over them. North Korea, one, that it cannot be deterred from going nuclear. It has already gone nuclear, but it cannot be deterred from further ramping up its campaign, its credibility of threats that it possesses. Because China cannot dispel the image that the West is after Korea. So Korea considers nuclear weapons as a crutch to survival of the regime. It is vulnerable. It cannot do away with nukes. The other thing is that China can, if China being the only ally of North Korea, if it turns its back against North Korea would have more of the urge to go nuclear, because it will have no one else for support. Then it would feel more vulnerable and more likely to go into expand its nuclear program. And one more thing, if China supports the U.S. in its quest to denuclearize North Korea, it will have a region full of U.S. influence, which it cannot afford. This is what I think as of now. Because China today, despite batting for sanctions on Korea, has again urged the U.S. to eke out a solution which is based on diplomacy and dialogue instead of pushing North Korea further away from peaceful means.
Right. I mean, these are a lot of good points, Syed. Well, it got me thinking about, what can be happening in the future? I mean, we know that President Putin has warned against pushing North Korea into a corner through sanctions and military pressure. Yet, of course, that's what the U.S. and its allies are doing. But what I'm really interested in is China, because they're feeling the heat over this test, because it overshadowed the BRICS summit in some ways. So, Syed, what do you think will happen in the near future, particularly relating to American and Chinese responses to North Korea?
You know, there are two concepts in nuclear strategy. One is first strike and one is second strike. You know, Korea is a weaker nuclear state and it is not ratified by the world community. Now, it invokes a pretty well-known dilemma on them. It is called the use or lose dilemma. If, and as things indicate, whatever USA and South Korea are doing right now, they've redeployed the THAAD missile and they're also mulling upon the redeployment of the tactical nuclear weapon in the ROK. So tell me, Andrew, this actually, and add the tweets with that Trump did and add the threats that Mattis gave, they are hell-bent upon denuclearizing North Korea. So what does this entail? They cannot denuclearize it by targeting Korean cities. They can do that by a counter-force first strike on North Korea's nuclear program. So this implies that North Korea would eventually feel more at jeopardy of losing it. So therefore, they would likely to use it. This is what is my biggest fear, that whatever threats the U.S. and South Korea is giving to DPRK is actually pushing Kim Jong-un towards a first preemptive strike on U.S. or South Korean cities, regardless of the risk that it entails. As I said earlier, China would not like to respond punitively to North Korea. If anything, yesterday they carried out drills, mock drills on the Yellow Sea. And that is probably, I just wrote about that about this a while ago. This, if anything, it is a signal to Donald J. Trump not to do anything silly, because China cannot afford to estrange North Korea. This is my conviction. This is my little 3 cents on the issue. Because China cannot afford a war on the Korean Peninsula. And if anything, if a war breaks out, China would bat for Pyongyang.
Okay, Syed, thank you. That was very deep and very strategic, just as your designation says. So, I mean, thank you for giving us everything that we expected, plus more. Much appreciated.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what Haniel and Syed both share with us today, I think we can come to the conclusion that what happened really is a big deal. I mean, granted, there is a lot of hype about it on the sidelines. All sides are kind of trying to frame this how they want to. But at the end of the day, I mean, a milestone has been reached. North Korea has an H-bomb. The world is different. But let's see whether it's for the better in terms of enhancing nuclear balance and stability, or for the worse, if maybe the U.S. and its allies attack. But we're holding our breath. We'll see what happens. Now, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kripko. Thank you for listening, and take care.